G'day, thanks for joining us. This is the podcast, and I wanted to tell you that this week I walked out of a movie. I shouldn't go in the first place, but I always break my rules that I'm never going to see another Hollywood movie as long as I live. But I did. You'll find out in the podcast. As well as that, Australian Made, The Budget, Sharks, Shoes, Walking Tracks, and Aussies all over, filling you in about what's up in Oz. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca, it's Mark here from Mount Beauty.
Mount Beauty?
Down northeast Victoria.
Yeah, I know.
So I live on the airfield and fly gliders. I've been doing it for about 50 years. And I just wanted to let you know that yesterday we had two young 16-year-old schoolboys from the local school who've been learning for a few months. And they had their first solo flight, which I thought was pretty good in this day and age.
Well, so pretty scary. I couldn't do it. Is there much to flying a glider, or is it just on a wing and a prayer, or what?
If you can ride a bicycle or pat your head and
rub your tummy,
then you could probably learn to fly a glider.
Yeah,
they fly similar to any plane. They're three-axis control.
Mm.
At Mount Beauty here, we use a winch to launch the gliders. That gets them up to about 600 metres or 1,500 to 2,000 feet. Some clubs use a plane to tow them up, which is a lot more expensive these days. So hence the winch is good for young people to learn because it's a fair bit cheaper.
So are they pretty safe gliders? Do they crash many?
No. Like anything, there's risks involved. But I've been flying for nearly 50 years and had no incidents. Oh, I've had a few, maybe had a couple of close calls, but, you know, it's a very safe sport.
Well, there you go. Now, when they do their flight, have they got someone with them?
No. So they've been training with me or another instructor for, you know, however long from when they start. Generally, it takes between, you know, 20 to 40 flights to get to the solo stage. Solos, by the way, is just the first step of hopefully a long life career of flying gliders or moving on to fly planes.
Mark, is autumn, winter a good time for gliders?
No, that's why we've just had a week of beautiful weather, so it's been good for them, but the rain's on its way.
Mm.
So probably it's going to deteriorate now for the season. Summer is generally the best.
Yeah, because you get a lot of updrafts and different wind, and so you can fly.
You might remember a couple of years ago I took Macca, Costa. Costa gave you a call. He was here for a gardening event, which my daughter helped organise, and she organised him to come and have a fly in the glider with me.
Well, there you go. You won't get me up there anytime soon, Mark, but I'd like an engine. But anyway.
Well, some gliders do have a little engine that can help them take off, but I've been doing a long time, and it's the main reason I let you know about the boys is because gliding, when I learnt to fly, there was lots of young people, and now it's becoming an older demographic.
Really?
So it's inspiring to see two young kids. Where else in Australia could two kids come down after school and learn to fly?
Exactly. I would have thought kids, maybe they're not as adventurous now. I don't know. Maybe they should be out taking a little bit of risk. Yeah, as you say, there's not much risk in flying a glider, but yes. If I had my life over again, I'd do a lot of things, and one of them would be to learn to fly, Mark. But and gliding, it sounds a lovely thing. You'll have to take me one day. I'll come with you. All right.
Absolutely. But we live at the foothills of Mount Bogong, the highest mountain in Victoria.
Yeah.
And shortly there'll be snow up there, and in the spring we get lots of flights over the snow.
All right. Good on you, Mark.
Okay.
I'll keep in touch.
Okay. Bye.
Where are you, Thomas?
I'm in Ingham,
mm.
And I'm bicycling around Australia. And I'll do the lap all the way around Australia. That's the plan.
Uh-huh. And how long have you been doing this?
Since 15th of February, I started in Perth.
Yep.
And now I have about 7,300 kilometers. And it's a push bike, and there's no batteries. I just have to mention that.
And you're enjoying it? You're digging it?
Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. Especially the encounter with people and so on. And so there's lots of talks, you know. People are very receptive and accessible. That's nice.
Yeah, I'll say. What was the impetus to doing this?
Oh, I've been long-distance biking in New Zealand and in the United States for the last years. And Australia was on my list because it's I just had interest. It's huge, and it has a huge variety of landscapes, and that was interesting. And it's safe.
And you've got no timetable. You're just pottering along. Is that Thomas?
Yeah, I am retired. I have no time to. It's just in August I should be finished. That's my target.
What did you do for a living?
Oh, I built cars like a good German.
So you built what? Like Volkswagens?
Volkswagens, yeah. I built Volkswagens.
You worked on the line, mate?
No, not really. I was a development engineer. I ended up as an executive.
I see. And now you've eschewed the car and gone to the bicycle, which is probably a good move, actually.
Yeah, when you're older, it's a nice thing to do. And as I said, the accessibility, you know, that people come to you and talk to you, and this is also fantastic.
So where are you now? You're in Ingham, and where are you heading to now?
Now I'm going up to Cairns, and in Cairns I will meet my daughter.
And then across the top.
Yes, and my daughter will rent a camper and will go with me for a while.
Uh-huh.
And so I have a little bit of support there. And then I go, but she will only go for 2 weeks, so there's not a lot of time. And then I will go to Darwin and from Darwin to Broome and then back to Perth.
Well, look, maybe we'll bump into you sometime, Thomas. That'd be nice. And, yes, safe travels, mate. Nice to talk to you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good to talk to you.
Good on you, mate. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Oh, Tony Ayling and Avril Ayling on the line. Good morning, kids.
Good morning, Macca.
Hi,
Macca. Hi. And you're in where? Hideaway Bay?
Yeah, we're in beautiful Hideaway Bay where the sun's just come up and there's the odd puffy cloud in the east, but mostly it looks like a lovely day and the wind's finally dropped a bit.
The southeast trades, eh?
Yeah, we've had strong winds it seems like a month or more now.
And you'll be, you've had a bit of rain too up there that way, haven't you?
Oh, no, not very much. I mean, we've been getting a few showers with the strong southeasterly, but not more than a few millimetres every now and then. We're in a bit of a rain shadow here in Hideaway Bay, which we love.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
After living at Daintree all those years.
Yes, exactly. And I noted that shark attack, but he was 2 km off the coast or something, out spearfishing. So that's always dangerous, I would reckon, Tony.
Well, spearfishing always excites the sharks, and that's when things are likely to happen.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I reckon too. You've got to be fairly brave to be doing it. Well, I think so. You know, I think if you, and especially if you're spearing some fish, and that's happening too. That
gets them very excited when the fish start thrashing around.
Supposed to be a 4 meter great white. That's a big fish.
Wow! Yes, definitely. Don't want to encounter one of those.
No, huge. What's happening in the underwater scene, mate? You've been doing much.
Well, the wind's been too strong for doing that, so we've been doing alternate things, and we've done a couple of multi-day hikes in our Whitsunday area here. And the first one we did was in what they call the Conway National Park, which is rainforest sort of behind Airlie Beach there. And that was pretty nice. It goes through an old forestry trail for 28 kilometres, and they've got a couple of sort of rudimentary camps there.
Uh-huh.
But the exciting thing about that was because it's been relatively wet here and they get more rain than us, it was full of leeches. And I took my sandals rather than covered shoes, so the leeches had a pretty good free rein on my feet.
Oh.
And I got about a dozen bites, and so they were all weeping blood when it came to get into my sleeping bag, so I put a couple of plastic bags over my feet to stop the blood getting on my sleeping bag. And unbeknownst to me, a leech had just attached itself before I put the plastic bag on.
Do we need to hear this, Tony? Oh God. Yeah, poor boy. So you've recovered, have you? Or
did it took a while, actually. It got infected because the bite was so bad. In the morning, the plastic bag was full of blood.
Oh, dear.
And the leech was very fat and happy in the bottom of the bag. And I had blood all over my foot.
Dear idea. That's a trap. Well, I won't say a trap for young players, but the bush and tropical place can be. You know, they're amazing things, aren't they? Leeches and the other thing is, of course, ticks falling out of trees and just on you too. They can be. They're just some of the things of the dangers.
We didn't get any ticks, Macca,
no ticks, but there were some pigs along the track too, and they had sort of wallows like beauty spas in the sort of yellow clay.
Beauty spas, I love that. Yeah.
Yes, lots of pigs we saw, and when we were camping, we could hear them grunting around the tent, which wasn't very reassuring at night.
Well, they're in plague proportions all over the place. Queensland's got them, New South Wales has got them. They're in Victoria, and I'm assuming they're out in the centre too, and I'm not sure about the west, but they're all over. Pigs. I suppose it's been the good season, certainly around the place. Lots of rain and lots of growth and lots of animals, and yeah, they're terrible things. Pigs. We only have to get foot and mouth or something like that in Australia, and it'll hit the fan. So I don't know what you do about it. You really need it. It's an army job, I think. We spoke to a couple of blokes last week who'd been out shooting, and they'd shot, I don't know, 1,200 pigs in about 3 weeks out near Warren in New South Wales. But they're everywhere. They're just everywhere.
Certainly are. Apparently they've been trying to control them with poison through the Conway National Park, but it hasn't worked very well, Macca, I can tell you.
No, you probably need, as I said, you need designated shooters, because they do terrific damage to the natural environment as well as agriculture too.
Huge damage.
Mm.
Anyway, we didn't have pigs on our second walk. We went out to and did what's a very new walk. It's only been open a few months. It's a 3-day, 32-kilometre walk on Whitsunday Island.
All right.
And that's one of the big islands in the Whitsundays, where Whitehaven Beach is. And you start at Whitehaven, and you basically circumnavigate the famous Hill Inlet and wander around through the forest, of different sorts of forest. And no pigs on the island, thank goodness.
Yeah, well,
but it's a really good walk. They've set up two really lovely camps, and as I say, 32 kilometres in 3 days. And you go up this peak in the middle of Whitsunday Island called Whitsunday Crag, and the views from the top are just amazing all around the island and up Hill Inlet.
And where exactly is Whitsunday Island?
Well, it's sort of...
Is it near Cardwell?
It's off Airlie Beach.
Off Airlie, yeah.
It's the biggest of the Whitsunday Islands, and it's sort of just outside Hamilton Island and towards the southern end of the main Whitsunday Islands.
Has it got resorts and things on it, or...?
There's no current resorts, I don't think, on Whitsunday Island.
Mm.
There's a number of defunct ones around the Whitsundays, but I don't think there's any on Whitsunday Island, actually.
Well, that sounds promising.
But it's got the famous Whitehaven Beach, which has got the beautiful white silica sand, and the Hill Inlet, which again is the white silica sand, and it's an inlet that cuts right through the island, literally right through it to the other side. And that was what we circumnavigated with this walk. It's called the Ngaro Walk, NGARO. It's just been opened and it's really lovely.
Well, we'll have to do that sometime. I don't know when I'm going to get to do it, but you catch a boat out there, do you?
Yes, there's a
Yeah, there's a mob called the Scamper who take off from Chute Harbour and take you out there to Whitehaven. And then after 3 days, they pick you up at Tun Bay.
That sounds lovely. That sounds lovely. All the things you two do. We'll have to hopefully we're coming up to Queensland this year in the next couple of months. So we'll call in and say good day. Be nice to see you.
You just really should see this part of the world, Macca. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, I will. I don't know it very well at all. So I'm just writing it down here. Whitehaven Beach, Whitsunday Island. See, I've not heard of Whitsunday. I mean, I've heard the Whitsundays, but I didn't know there was a Whitsunday Island. But see, I should get out more, Tony. Avril?
The two main islands are Whitsunday Island in the south and Hook Island in the north.
Uh-huh.
And then they're only a very narrow pass between them, but then they're surrounded by other islands like South Mole and Daydream and all that, the Hamilton Island.
All right. Good on you. Nice to talk to you both.
Right, Macca, good.
To you, Macca.
See you later. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Phil's in the Alice. Morning, Phil.
Good morning, Macca. How are you?
Mate, I'm all right. What's going on?
Well, a couple of weeks ago you mentioned that you might make a trip up to Darwin. And I thought, well, we've got our world-famous Beanie Festival coming up. And figured if you came through Alice, then you could do a bit of a road trip up to Darwin. The 19th to the 22nd of June. And this is our final Beanie Festival.
The final one.
Yeah.
What, lack of interest or it's...
No, it's... there's lots of people on the committee that are getting a little bit tired. They've been doing it for 30 years. And our wonderful chief beaniologist, Joe Nixon.
Uh-huh.
It was a creation of hers some 30-odd years ago, her and her auntie. It just started off as a little workshop. And it's just grown exponentially over the years. We sold over 7,000 beanies last year and tea cozies and that sort of thing. So it's on at the Araluen Arts Centre for the weekend of the 19th to the 22nd of June, and thought maybe you could do an OB from there on the Sunday morning if you'd be in a position to be here. I know it's probably not much notice, but who knows? You might be able to make it.
Well, it sounds like a good idea. I haven't been to the Alice for ages. We went to Darwin a couple of years ago, and we should go back to Darwin as well.
Yes.
Phil, look, we'll put it in the discussion and try and – I'd love to come. I'd love to come to the Alice.
It would be great to have you back, come back and visit us. And join in the fun and the frivolity of the Beanie Festival.
Yeah, and I've got a couple of ripper beanies too.
Great.
We had them last year. One of our listeners came in one morning and he had a beanie with stuff growing out of the top of it. And it's really nice. And it can get nice and fresh in the Alice in the winter, can't it?
It can. It certainly can. So it's absolutely perfect beanie weather, and we'll be in June. And then some of the creations are just out of this world. Really. There are some very clever people.
Yeah, they're things of beauty, aren't they? You should hang them on the wall sort of thing or put them in a box. They're lovely things, beautiful things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Works of art.
Yes.
All right, good on you, Phil. Great to talk to you. Look, I'd really like to get there, and if we can, we'll be there. Okay, and
all right. The take a look at the Beanie Fest website. So beaniefest.org.au, and that'll give you all your details. And it would be just terrific to host you and Kel and some of your crew and the ABC team up here. They're wonderful, and I'm sure they'd look after you.
Oh, they would. They would, mate. Sorry, I'm just over there. Yeah, they would, for sure. We'd love to go. We'll see how things pan out, okay?
All right. Sure, Macca.
Good on you, mate.
Thanks very much for catching up.
It's a pleasure. Good on you, Phil.
Bye-bye for now.
I went to the movies. I went to the movies the other day. Where's the bit of paper? can't find it. Doesn't matter. It'll be. I'll grab it in a minute. I went to the movies the other day because I read a review, which I'm trying to find here, and I usually don't take much notice of movie reviews. It was by Nikki Gemmell in the Australian. I read the Australian, and it says a sparkling take on grim truths, and it's about the movie The Devil Wears Prada 2. Now, I didn't see The Devil Wears Prada 1, but it's the first movie I've ever walked out on, and I just... Maybe it's something about American movies. I just can't take them. I mean, I much prefer a French movie or an Italian movie. There's something about European movies. They're just... Anyway, I just thought it was so daggy that I apologised to the people I was with and said, look, I'll be in the foyer looking at my phone. Looking at my phone. I'm sitting in the foyer and I'm looking at my phone. and I was... But who was in it? Anne Hathaway, who overplayed her role just hugely. They're people you never meet, but in movies you meet them because they're supposed to be like people in real life and they're not. And Meryl Streep and a few other bods, but no. I never usually believe. It's a bit like literary criticism. My mum, we used to talk about it when I was a kid going to school and, like, if you like a book, well, you like it, you know, but you can't say that it's a good movie or a bad movie or a good book or a bad book. It depends if you like it. If you like it, you like it, and if you don't, you don't, and that should be enough. And if people are lording something up and you think, well, no, I don't agree with that, I think that's a lot of horse feathers, well, that is your right and privilege. I just thought I'd tell you that. Be warned. To be warned is... forearmed. G'day, this is Macca.
Hi, Macca. It's Anita Salisbury calling from Winton.
Hi, Anita.
How are you?
Not bad.
That's great. Actually, it's quite interesting that you were just talking about movies because we're off to the open air movies tonight in Winton to watch a John Wayne movie, which I think might sound more up your alley.
No, I wasn't a fan of John Wayne, but anyway, yeah. Which movie is this one?
Well, I'm actually not sure now that you said that. That was a bit of an ad lib because I could hear you talking about The Devil Wears Prada and I thought, oh, well, maybe Macca might think it's good to talk to John Wayne.
Don't. Yeah, look, Johnny Wayne, sorry, okay, you know, but I'm never a fan of John Wayne. He was a big star, wasn't he? And I could never see why he was a big star. But anyway.
May not have walked out on that one.
No, it's a Western because he was in mostly Westerns, wasn't he?
Yes, absolutely. I'm from Monto, but we're up in Winton for the weekend to celebrate a friend of ours is an artist and he has an exhibition in the Walsing Matilda Centre called Under the Shade.
Right.
And it's a lovely exhibition of 8 pieces that he's done in large-scale oil canvases.
Wow.
And they're of the mostly of the Australian Akubra hat to celebrate. His father was a tailor in Winton, his grandfather, in Winton many years ago. And it's his way of reconnecting to the crafts and the outback. So a lovely exhibition that we were here last night to celebrate.
In Winton. Well, I just read that a minute ago. Festival of the Outback Opera at Royal Theatre in Winton. That starts 19th.
Yes, next week.
Wednesday, is it? Or Tuesday, yes. Wednesday? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, with the finale next week.
It's all happening in Winton, Anita.
Yes, absolutely. And it's absolutely going to be beautiful for the fact the drive out here was spectacular.
Uh-huh.
I drove from Longreach. We went to Longreach and then I had a bit of a solo trip from Longreach to Winton because I was working on the road through the libraries in Longreach as well as Winton. And I have never seen the outback look so spectacular. In fact, I was very impressed, and you never know, the person might be listening, but there's a massive crop of forage sorghum planted between Longreach and Winton, and it is just amazing to see that someone put a plough in there and planted that and took advantage of the fact that they're having such a great season. So it's absolutely, if you're driving out this way, it's just going to be breathtaking. So I was driving between 5 and 6 in the afternoon the Western Plains, the outback sunsets. It was absolutely breathtaking. It was an absolute pleasure to be an Australian. What a joy.
Yeah, it is, exactly. The thing is that not apparently a lot of people are out taking advantage of it, because one thing and another, they're not hitting the road this year.
Yeah, well, I think the caravan parks are not too bad, and I think there seems to be we're staying upstairs in the North Gregory Hotel with all our 50 people that came to support our artist friend.
Mm.
So the walls are thin, so they're probably all listening to me. and it's you know, the caravan parks have got people in there. The pubs were quite busy the night before, even outside of our crowd. So, you know, hopefully next weekend there'll be a bit of a injection of life on top of the normal tourist crowd.
Well, maybe it's because you've got things on in Winton, and you know, the opera thing is on too.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the reason. So you're 50 people. I've stayed in the North Gregory because on a couple of variety club bashes that went through there.
And it's a great old pub.
Yeah, it is. There's a lovely pub in Charleville too, which looks a bit like the same. Yeah, they're lovely old things with big verandas, and yeah, I love them.
Yeah, and been burnt down a few times too, and resurrected from the ashes. And the poor old Australian across the road hasn't quite got the polish, and it's shut. The doors are shut and boarded up, but the Gregory's going strong. Anyway, Brad Short is an artist from Mackay, and he's a dear friend of ours, and very, very talented. And about 3 years ago, he tasked me with the job of trying to find some hats for him to paint, after he was inspired by my husband's hat when they were out fishing up in North Queensland. So we were able to find some hats all over the place.
Are these hats that have got character, like they've been trodden on by numerous cattle in the yards and been, you know, under the house for 10 years, so they've got a bit of character?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got cane farmers. We've got an English backpacker that came with a history of English literature and met a grazier from Quilpie when she was out there at the Yulo festival, or I think the Yulo lizard races is where they met.
Yeah, right.
And so we painted Sophie's hat as well. And we've got Roy Goody from Monto, Arne Hallward from Gin Gin, and of course Searle's in Winton, the famous Searle's Outback store.
Yeah.
There's a hat there that's never sold. It was in a box for 60 years, and it's called the Bushman. And it was I was only a size 32, so no Bushman out here needed a size that small. But it was
that's a small head, isn't it? 30.
Yes, I think it was.
Usually it's about 56, 58, 60, 61 or 2.
Yes.
By G.
Maybe I've got my measurements wrong. I'd have to read the catalogue quickly. But it's very, very small, and so it never sold. So it's sitting in a special box in the store at Searle's. Then we've got a guy that's a bull rider as well, Stuart Frame from Monto, and we've got a guy who's a butcher and a mango farmer from Mundubbera.
Sounds all right, Anita. And this morning in, you haven't been outside, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm on the veranda of the North Gregory, overlooking the main street of Winton. So, it's just beautiful.
Beautiful morning. We should all be there. We should be doing an outside broadcast on the veranda there at the North Gregory.
Yes, and we had a little pop-up cameo last night by Graham Connors, turned up to the exhibition.
Oh, wow, did you?
Guitar and microphone and speakers in hand. and he entertained us while we looked through the gallery, which was an absolute honour.
All the best things happen in the bush. We should have all been there.
Yeah, absolutely. And all Graham... Right. Graham just entertained us. It was just fantastic. And there's a couple of connections there that drew him out to want to be at the exhibition. But he sang a beautiful song called The Ringer and the Princess.
All right. I haven't got it, but I can find it. I'll find it. I'll play it later, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, Anita. Nice to talk to you.
Okay, no worries. Thanks, Macca.
Good on you. Bye.
Bye.
Is it Krista? Where are you, Krista?
Yes, good morning, Macca. I'm at Inverell Airport North, just out of town, and want to let you know how dry it is. I've never seen my garden having to be cut right back down the bottom, and pray for rain and hope it'll come back. If not, I'm too old now to worry about replanting.
Yeah,
is there rain on the horizon? Because it seemed...
Yes, but tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow and the next day. 20 mil or 25 mil maybe tomorrow, and perhaps 35 if we're really, really lucky the next day. Oh. But it won't save our soy crop or lucerne crop. That's got to be turned back into the soil. It's not. It's gone. It's dead.
Uh-huh.
That's a first. We've not seen that here before. We have had the drought, but not this heavy, this fast.
No.
So rainwater tanks are drying up. My son-in-law's buying water daily for the family out there at Gilgai, which is only 12 minutes away from Inverell.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to tell you about the livestock we have here at Inverell.
Yep.
I'm 76, Macker, and I love my gardening. And I'm one of these people who cannot resist reaching out and breaking a bit off a hedge and a bit off this ivy and bringing it home and planting it and watching it grow. So hubby took me downtown for a Macker's lunch by the river, and we went for a walk in the park. And I saw these gorgeous big white blooms, a little bit like magnolias on this huge tree. And I thought, oh, they're just lovely. And I couldn't help myself. I reached out and I snapped three off and I carried them home in my lap in the car. And it was hours later I started to itch. And I took off my blouse and I thought, what is this? I had little black dots all over me. So I went up to the ER because it was getting quite desperate. I couldn't remove them. It was already embedded, whatever it was embedded in my skin. So up to the ER, there was a visiting Indian doctor, a young chap, and he took one look when he finally got to me, and he said, I have seen bed bugs. These are bed bugs. And I looked at him and I said, they are not bed bugs. They are baby ticks. I said, I had a German mother. There's no way in the world I could have bed bugs. Anyway, he went off with one in a pair of tweezers, put it under the microscope and came back and he said, you are right, these are baby ticks.
Wow.
I had 17 of them. I had one in my groin, one down the undies under the elastic. The rest were all over my chest, one right next to the nipple that my own GP a few days later had to cut out because we couldn't get it out. And I'd never known the light. They were so tiny but black, which was lucky we could see it.
So
I don't know who was more embarrassed.
So what do you do? Do you spray something on? Does most of them come out if you spray something?
Not that I'm aware of. I have had one or two, and no, you actually have to pull them out and make sure you get it all.
Because sometimes you put salt on them, don't you?
I've not tried that.
Mm.
That might work. I know a lot of people try different things, but the doctor had tweezers, so I had tried tweezers, but they didn't want to let go.
Oh, dear. That'd be scary. Yes. That'd be scary, Krista.
It was a bit. And not only that, it was very irritating. They were starting to really itch.
Oh, dear.
They were gorging themselves and they were getting deeper and deeper.
And you heard the story this morning with Tony with the leeches and he put the plastic bag on and it was still in there and then he woke up in the morning and the plastic bag's full of blood and, oh, God, leeches.
That's what made me think of it, Macca.
Oh, dear.
There was another lady chap you played that an old story about the mouse play. Well, we had that up here too. And I felt like a murderous Macca because I was putting buckets of water out and played spin the bottle with these poor mice. And there was one morning I had 104 in the bucket of water.
Oh, dear.
They love the peanut butter. And I tell you what, it was a whole year before I could eat peanut butter again. And I used to love it.
Oh, Krista, thanks for, I don't think anyone's...
wonderful.
You usually get a tick and it's a grown one. I've never known but I suppose they must have babies and, you copped them.
I was unlucky, but I tell you what, I'll never do that again. I won't be cutting flowers and sitting with the bunch on my lap.
I should play Norma Murphy's song, Take a Cutting. About her mum who used to do the same thing.
I did that March last year down at Port Macquarie, took a cutting off the hedge next to the beach house bungalow in the caravan park and took a shortcut through the carport as I thought I was going to, and I'm watching where I'm stepping because I'm elderly. And as I put all my weight on my right foot, didn't see the lattice work across the top.
Oh, dear.
Hit my head, knocked me on my bum and back, broke my right leg in two places.
Krista.
So that's the last time
I'm going to take a cutting.
Anything.
Good on you. Nice to talk to you.
Oh, you too, Macca. You take care. Stay well.
I will.
Love listening to you.
Okay. See ya.
All right. Bye.
G'day, this is Macca.
Macca, it's Judy Plath here from Bundaberg. I spoke to you a few weeks ago about Australian-grown and made soy milk. You remember chatting about that?
I do.
Yes.
Judy, I was most – I just got my back beans. I had back beans for tea the other night because for one reason or another, on toast. It's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked on the can and it said 47%. Made in Australia. I thought, now, how do you get 40? The beans are either made here or not, and then the tin, and then there's the label. I can't understand how it's 47%, but anyway.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned baked beans, actually, Macca, because we used to grow navy beans, which navy beans are the beans that then get baked and made into baked beans. And
navy beans, eh?
Navy beans, they're called. And I'm actually a navy bean agronomist by trade myself, but there is not one single paddock of navy beans grown in Australia anymore. And that is one.
Why not?
It's, well, because of imports. And I'll tell you a great story about navy beans.
Tell me.
Which made into baked beans. Well, when the Americans were over here for the Second World War, they had a base out near Kingaroy in Queensland, and the soldiers were all eating these baked beans out of tins, and the Aussies had never seen them before. And anyway, as part of a food security initiative, the American government helped Kingaroy farmers start a navy bean industry, and there was actually an act passed through Queensland Parliament to get the navy bean industry off the ground so that they would have baked beans on hand to feed the American soldiers. Now, that started in the 40s, and there was a navy bean industry around Kingaroy and other parts of Queensland for decades.
And their navy beans, what, because they were navy coloured?
No, I don't know where the navy bit comes from, to be honest, because they're a nice creamy colour.
Maybe that's all the sailors got when they were at sea. All they got was beans. More bloody beans. Yes. Yeah.
Maybe it's to do with their uniform being navy. I'm not sure. But anyway, we don't grow any in Australia anymore because of imports. So that can you had the other day, it would have been the tomato sauce that was the Australian component.
47%? That must be the tin, I reckon.
Tin. And maybe water, of course, because they cook them with water. And, yeah, there'd be a bit of sugar in there, which would be Australian sugar. But the beans themselves are all being imported now, and that is thanks again.
Every time I talk to you, Judy, I get depressed.
I know. And, look, I was ringing with some good news, Macca, after we spoke, a popular cafe in Bundaberg heard your story on the radio talking to me, and she contacted me and said, how do I get onto this Australian soy milk? And long story short, she swapped over to Vitasoy, the Australian soy milk now, in her cafe. And we had the local TV crew out there and ABC Radio were there to interview her because she came out to the paddock. We had a soybean field day on. She came out to the paddock with all the farmers and we did a bit of a media story about her choosing Australian. And anyway, then a cafe manager down on the Gold Coast contacted me and said, how do I get hold of this Australian soy milk? And so it's kickstarted a little revolution, Macca.
Well,
we're just going to slowly change cafes over to Aussie soy milk.
Yeah, I spoke to my barista. He's not really my barista, but I sometimes get a coffee there at Harry. And Harry's on another planet, really. He's a space cadet. He's busy.
Wasn't interested.
Well, he's busy making coffee. Art for art's sake, money for Christ's sake, as my father used to say. But anyway, Jude. Well, that's good. We've started a trend.
Started a trend, and we harvested all our soybeans yesterday. We finished yesterday. We got them all in the truck, so we're very relieved. That's this crop for this year over. Always relieved when they're in the truck and out of the paddock.
I think maybe somebody somewhere will grow a plot of navy beans.
Well,
Yeah.
Sadly, we don't even have viable seed anymore in Australia. That's how devastating. I was devastated about the loss of the navy bean industry, and that was down to Coles and Woolworths importing cheaper imports. And the SPC, the cannery down at Shepparton, they were the last ones using Australian grown. And they actually had a big promotion. They had a photo of farmers on the side of the tin, some Kingaroy fellas with red dirt in their blood, and they were on the tin. And anyway, it didn't work, unfortunately. The power of Coles and Woolworths, their cheaper stuff beat us. So we no more navy beans. But look, on that point, we're having a forum in Kingaroy on the 19th of June to talk about this issue. We have got to figure out how to protect our Australian industries, or protect apparently is the wrong word, secure our Australian industries. And we're going to be talking about it out at Kingaroy, because they've lost the peanut industry and the navy bean industry, and we just think it's too important. We've got to figure out how to save our Australian grown crops.
There's another thing about all the other things that are bothering a lot of us. Some people aren't bothered at all by, but others are. Jude, keep up the good work, and I'm going to work on Harry.
Good. Good on you.
So they don't look at the labels, and he's just selling coffee.
Yeah. And they want it to make nice latte art. But the Vitasoy does make nice latte art. You can make a flower with Vitasoy, no worries.
No, I'm not. No. Yeah, all right. Good on you, Jude.
Thanks, Macca.
It's a pleasure.
Okay, bye.
G'day, this is Macca.
Oh, hello, Macca. My name's Tini. I'm from South Gippsland. And I was just listening to the lady talking about the tiny little ticks.
Uh-huh.
And I've just come back from Africa. I go there quite frequently, like once, twice a year.
Mm.
And they have big ticks that are easy to pick off. And they have little ones, and they call them pepper ticks. And they're just like pepper. They're tiny, tiny, and they're really hard to get off.
Yeah.
You have to have tweezers to pinch them out. I have used tea tree oil on top of them, and they don't like that much.
Well,
Go ahead.
No, Heather just rang me and said scabies cream, and then Marie's just rang and she says tick off. You freeze it or something, and then you put it just above the tick, and there you go. But I wouldn't like to have 17 of them all over my body.
It's not unusual.
It's not unusual. Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Teeny.
They're on leaves and things like that. If you go bushwalking and you don't have long pants on, you just come home and you just have to check. And
it's a jungle out there. It's a jungle out
there.
Tini, were you in Africa, were you?
Yes, I was. I go for 4 weeks, twice a year usually, just to do some conservation with endangered species.
Uh-huh.
Just basically, I sit in the back of a truck and ride around and count animals, basically. But it's simplified.
Well,
it's terrific.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, I suppose. And you see lots of elephants and all the sort of things you see in Africa, I suppose. Whereabouts in Africa do you go?
I go to KwaZulu-Natal, so it's on the eastern side, and below Kruger, sort of in the middle of South Africa.
Uh-huh, and it's not dangerous in Natal?
It's dangerous everywhere, really, but I'm so far in the bush. I'm 3 hours into the bush, and and that's safe, you know, as long
as you... How did you get into that, Tony?
Well, I went to Africa on a couple trips and wanted to do something where the money that I paid went to conservation rather than to corporations, and someone suggested a charity called Wildlife Act, and you pay for 2 week experience. So I usually go for four, and the majority of the money, in fact, all of the money goes back to the conservation. And it's pretty basic accommodation, but I absolutely love it, and it's terrific, the things that we see and we experience, and
All right. Well, so you've had firsthand contact with ticks.
Oh yes, every day. Yes, I've still got a scar on my leg, but they might be pepper ticks. I've never heard referred to that here, but That's certainly what they call them in Africa.
All right. Well, nice to talk to you, Tini. You, where are you in Gippsland?
Yep, in Currumburra, yep.
Where the worm farm all used to be. I don't know.
They're still working. They're still working underground, but I don't think we farm them anymore. Yeah.
Good on you. Nice to talk to you.
All right. Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye.
This is the All Over News.
This is the All Over News, and the latest news on the health front, at least, must be hantavirus that killed four passengers on a Dutch cruise ship out of Argentina and whose genesis seems to have been in South Korea as a mysterious fever struck UN troops sometime in the late 70s and which was traced to field mice near the Hantan River, hence the name hantavirus. You may have missed Professor Michael Woodward last week, but I thought it's timely that we listen to his call again, re the efficacy of vaccinations. As we now know, epidemics, pandemics can be just around the corner. And despite the naysayers, vaccination seems to be the sensible solution for many serious health problems. Professor Michael Woodward.
Ah, hi, Macca. Good to speak to you. I just want to let you know that we've had a masterclass on vaccination of older people here in Melbourne, and you may not be aware of it, but vaccination is the second most effective thing we can do to improve our health. So we've got 60 specialists from around Australia to get together and encourage them to be part of the push to get older people vaccinated. Many of your listeners will be older or have older mothers, and the greatest gift we can give her, our mother, will be to get her to get vaccinated, because it's such an important way of preventing disease and making sure that we don't become frail.
You're talking about the flu or other things?
Yeah, well, the good news is there's two other vaccines coming on the market on the what's called the National Immunisation Program in the next couple of months, one actually next week, which prevent against a disease called RSV, which is just as bad as the flu and very common, and another one against a form of pneumonia. So it's really important that we get high vaccination rates. We've done a very good job with our children, but I reckon we can do the same with our older people too. And think about it. Have a discussion with your mother today. Is she up to date with vaccination? Because if you want to be around and avoid becoming frail, avoiding nursing home, vaccination is the thing to do.
You're a professor, is that right, Michael?
Yeah, I work at Austin Hospital and the University of Melbourne here in Melbourne, and I'm passionate about improving the health of older people and keeping them fit. And as I said, vaccination is the one thing that can really do it. Not just flu, obviously COVID vaccines are still important, but these other ones that are coming on the National Immunisation Program, RSV and a pneumonia vaccine, they're going to make a big difference, because at the moment they're quite expensive or not available. When they become available, they'll be essentially free. And we need to make sure they don't just sit on the shelves, but actually get into the place they're meant to be, into our older people, people over the age of 65.
And there's a bit of a pushback against vaccination. I don't know why, but you'd have to deal with that too.
Yeah, well, interestingly, older people pushing back a lot less. Surveys show that about 80% of older people are very happy to be vaccinated. The main reason people don't get vaccinated is because nobody talks to them about it. Their GP, and increasingly, we're trying to get specialists to talk about it. So that's why we had this group of specialists come from all around Australia, 60 of them, to hear for 2 days about the benefits of vaccination here in Melbourne.
So COVID is still around in some sort of form?
Absolutely. In fact, most of the people who are dying of COVID now, and there's several thousand a year, are in nursing homes. So it's important that we don't lose sight of that and get vaccinated ourselves before we visit older people in nursing homes, because otherwise we'll take the germ into them.
When do you think those vaccines will be available?
So the one for RSV next week, and the one for pneumonia, it's going to be given the name Capvaxive. It's going to be available, I think, in late June or early July, about that period. So both of them coming very soon. You know, when I started on this, there are only two vaccines that we could give to older people, the pneumonia vaccine and flu. Now we've got six or seven very effective vaccines, and these are so important. They're second most important way to maintain health beyond clean drinking water for younger people.
Michael, great to talk to you. Professor Michael Woodward. This is the All Over News, and the other day I attended a function where a lot of maritime people, marine pilots, captains, engineers, deckies, a collection of maritime all sorts really, who had gathered to honour a workmate, marine pilot Michael Kelly, who you've met on the program various times. It was at this gathering that I met Murray Doyle. Now Murray was the captain of the Aurora Australis, the Antarctic research vessel plying out of Hobart. The Aurora has since been replaced by the RSV Noyena. It's bigger and better and faster. Murray Doyle has some interesting stories to tell.
I'm at the Captain Cook Hotel. I bet there's a lot of Captain Cook hotels around the place.
There's one here and one over at Paddington.
I'm talking to Murray Doyle. How are you, Murray?
I'm good, thanks.
Murray, you one-time captain of the Aurora Australis.
Yes, retired in 2016.
Well, we were down in Hobart about 2000, I reckon, and the Aurora was parked over in the bay there. We were at Brook Street, I think. And so during an ad break, we ran over. And I don't know if I was talking to you, Murray, but we talked to a few people on board, but who knows? What sort of a gig was that?
That was pretty good. Getting to go to Antarctica multiple times a year was kind of blows people's minds away when you said you did that, but it could be pretty rough going down there in the ocean and then that ploughing through the ice to get to the various bases, but it was always very worthwhile and enjoyable.
I remember at the time, I was telling you about, we were down in Hobart, I spoke to Sir Philip Law. What's his name?
He was the original head of the Antarctic.
One of the original.
Yeah, he was the
Antarctician.
Yeah, he was. He set the whole operation up.
So anyway, I was speaking to him and I said, you know, how many times? He said, I've been down to Antarctica, you know, 26 or 30 times or something like that. I said, are you going? Because when I spoke to him, he was about 92. And I said, are you going down? And he said, no. I said, why not? He said, I can't stand the seasickness on board the Aurora Australis.
Yeah, well, she's built for breaking ice, so once you got into the heavy swells and whatnot, she rolled fairly a lot.
So how did you become a seafarer?
When I left school, I became a deck cadet with the Australian National Line and went from there. So I spent quite a long time with the Australian National Line and got my master's certificate and then went to Howard Smith's and then ended up with P&O on the Aurora Australis. So
people do tours now to Antarctica and they're or and R and oo, and yet you probably just, here we are again. Take it for granted.
Not really. I used to like the early mornings when I was just first mate on board and just steaming through the ice and put a bit of classical music on and it was just fantastic. The changing landscape as you're going past icebergs and penguins and seals, and it's magnificent, the place. It's you know, once you go down there, you always want to go back.
What was the music you were playing, do you think?
Oh, it's just Andrea Bocelli, mostly opera type stuff. To me, it was just the right music to play there. So some of the younger people wanted to play a bit of head banging music, but I didn't think that was appropriate.
Doesn't seem to fit the bill, really, does it, when you're gliding along in a very pristine, quiet environment?
That's true.
Murray, tell me about water and the Straits of Hormuz.
Well, I think there's, well, it's my opinion, especially there's a lot of these ships have been up there for a long time, and getting fresh water would be one of their major problems. Most of them make their own fresh water, and you've got to steam up and down, and I don't think the water in the Strait would be all that good for making fresh water, so unless they've got some water barges coming out and supplying these ships, I think in the not-too-distant future, is going to be, if they haven't already started rationing their fresh water supplies, they're going to have to start doing it, and which is going to lead to health problems and things later along the way. So.
And as you say, there's a lot of ships there. It's not just one or two, is it?
No, they're talking about thousands up there or something, so it's going to be a big problem. Because most ships carry a fair bit of food, but you've only got a limited water supply, and depending on you steaming through the water and making your own or getting into port and loading water. So
a
bit surprised that nobody's mentioned that yet. So one of those things that all those mariners are all stuck up there and don't seem to be too high on anybody's priority.
Murray, what have you done since you retired? Don't tell me you've taken a cruise down to Antarctica.
Not yet. I've promised my partner we will, and that's basically been travelling through Asia and Europe and doing things that you enjoy in retirement.
You miss the sea? I mean,
I did for a while, and then they called me back to do one trip in 2019, and after getting tossed all over the Southern Ocean, I thought, no, retirement's place for me. Quite happy now.
That's good.
Spent enough at sea. So.
Yeah, I guess so. Murray, great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ian.
Yep. Letters, tweets and faxes.
All of them.
We get sacks.
We do.
But this is not a letter. I've got a lovely piece of artwork in front of me. It's a little homemade postcard, on the front of which is a lovely drawing done by the person who sent it, Sheila Gadaloff. And on the back is a little message and a stamp, of course. And it's come through the mail. And it's just the most delightful thing. It's not a letter. It's not an email. It's not a fax or a text. It's a lovely little postcard, handmade. And it's just a gem. As I've told you many times, the listeners to this program, the people who contribute, make the program. Sheila says to me, "Dear Ian and crew, I write terrible emails, so I'll stick to postcards." So here we go. Postcards from Brisbane, number one. I've fallen in love with the baobab trees in Anzac Square. There are several planted, and as I look at the different trees and palms, they must have significance, places where battles were fought. The square fills at lunchtime each day, and the day I drew, this emptied quickly with a passing shower. Best wishes from Sheila G. It's a treasure. And it's a most marvellous little drawing of Anzac Square, I think I've been there, in Brizzy, of the baobab tree and people passing by. If I do a book, that'll go in the book, because it's just a wonderful, beautiful thing, and I'll put it in our archive so that somebody in 100 years... Do you think people will look at our archives in 100 years? I don't think they will. They won't be interested. Will they still be on their phones, or will they be on Mars? Do you think about those things? I do. 1300 700 222 is our number. I wanted to write to you, said a bloke called Yanis Farkas, about black sheep and coloured wool. Now, I know that when you mention wool to most people, they think of long, soft, pure white stuff Australia is so rightly famous for, but there are small groups of dedicated and enthusiastic people around the country who think black is beautiful and proudly display their sheep, which are anything but white. The colours range from light greys, tans, browns to almost pure black, and some of the most attractive variegated colours. And not a drop of dye anywhere. It is all natural. You'd be forgiven, says Yanis, to suspect magic when looking at some of these individual animals on show. And individuals they are, the pride and joy of their breeders, a much treasured, often pampered, dyed-in-the-wool aristocracy of the sheep clan. The lineage of some breeds such as the Perrondales, the Corriedales, and Bonds can be traced back almost to the original mother sheep. Their wool is much sought after by hand spinners, weavers and craftspeople who appreciate the strong, rugged, natural colours with easy handling characteristics. And that's why I'm interested in this, because my mum was a weaver, and sometimes she'd get a bag of wool sent down by my uncle, and sometimes it'd be white, but sometimes it'd be coloured, and he'd shear it, and thereby hangs a tale. And I'd come home and she'd be at the little treadle and doing stuff and make me a jumper of all sorts of colours, browns and sort of gingers and stuff, all sorts of wool, wonderful stuff. With this letter, which came in ages ago, it's still relevant today. And I looked at some of the sheep, and you know, if I had an acre or two, I'd get some coloured sheep, because they've just got character. I like sheep generally, but if I had a couple of acres, I'd get two or three or four coloured sheep. And Yanis concludes, there is a magic too to the feel of the garments produced. They seem to carry with them the care of the breeder, the dedication of the spinner, the artistry of the craftsperson melded into one-off unique product. Isn't that lovely? And you can see that often at a local show or a field day. There'll be a little stand of coloured sheep and treadles and all sorts of things. Once you've made it, you say, there you are, that didn't exist before I got to me treadle and made that. This letter is from a dear departed friend of mine. His name was Malcolm Reed, and he was with the Australian Flora Foundation. I'm not sure it exists anymore, but this is right on the course, because remember last week, I spoke to the bloke who was taking a couple of Carnaby's cockatoos made of fiberglass back to Mora in Western Australia, and they're going to put them in the park. And what country towns do and need to do is paint their silos, have fairs, have festivals, all sorts of things to get people to go to their places. Have a listen to this. Macca, when is your program going to publish the ABC Guide to Regional Botanic Gardens? It never happened. He said, you see, I have this vision that a few years down the track, a family driving interstate will chuck the guide into the car with their maps and Gregory's National Parks guide before setting off. The first picnic this family has at their destination will be at the Regional Botanic Garden, because there, not only are there mysterious interconnecting trails to chase around, there are samples of local fruit trees, crops, and worst weeds. There is a bed of local endangered plant species and an explanation of why the town's streets are lined with pepper trees. As well, some beds are regrown examples of the region's pre-agriculture vegetation. The next day, this is on the trip, it's getting exciting, even if it's raining, our family can drive around the tourist route signposted by the Shire Council and actually know what they are looking at. I suppose my vision applies more to inland and northern Australia. It's hard to see our family when visiting the coast doing anything but squabbling at the beach. My stimulus for this vision comes from two directions. Firstly, small voluntary organisations backed by various societies for growing Australian plants, directors of the foundation, are trying to orchestrate a network of regional botanic gardens to provide skilled centres for propagating endangered species around Australia. Secondly, with respect to my vision, as a lecturer about plants at Macquarie Uni, I'm constantly staggered by the number of students who are unaware of the wheat industry, the growth of vegetables, where pasta comes from, what a seed is, etc., etc., etc. Sometimes I think I should be teaching potato peeling. A whole generation seems to be lost to common sense. Can we start something for the next generation? Perhaps I should ring you early one Sunday when lines are empty and have a good whinge. But more positively, you could chat to Parks and Gardens people of councils at Mareeba, Coffs, Albany, Port Augusta, Tamworth, and a few others to see what their plans are. Do you think that regional botanic gardens with benefits to tourism, environmental and botanical education, and endangered species are a good idea? Do you want to be in on it? And of course, I've let the side down. That was Malcolm 20 years ago. Malcolm Reed from what was then the Australia Flora Foundation, as I said, at least 25 years ago. Lovely fella. Tom, where are you?
Yeah, g'day, Macca. Tom from Brunswick in Western Australia.
Oh, right. What's happening, mate? What are you doing?
Just on my way to work. I just turned on the car as I hopped in and heard your voice starting to call in, so I thought I would for a chat.
Good. Whereabouts are you?
Brunswick, Western Australia, down near Bunbury.
All right, yep. And what do you do? What's work for you, Tom?
I'm a stevedore at the Bunbury Port.
Oh, busy? What goes in and out of the Bunbury Port?
Oh, lots of stuff. A lot of grain, mineral sands. We send out a lot of scrap metal. It's been a busy time of the year, but hopefully starting to quieten down. But I just wanted to call in and talk about the federal budget that got released this week.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, mainly just I thought, I can't speak for all young Australians, but I feel like it was a bit of a tough week. I think the changes had been rumoured for a week or so I think we sort of knew what was coming, but when it was handed down, it was a bit of a shock. And for young Australians trying to get ahead in the world today with, inflation and growing prices with wages not keeping up, it's quite difficult to do so, and I think this just makes it harder.
I think you said the budget was released. It didn't really release. It was released. It escaped, I think, Tom.
What was that, sorry?
I said the budget wasn't released, it escaped.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, go on. Go on.
Yeah, I just thought the removing the 50% discount on capital gains taxes and replacing it with a minimum 30% is, if people actually do the math on their investments is, it almost doubles the amount of tax that you may pay on an investment. And for young Australians who might be investing their money elsewhere to grow their wealth to perhaps get into the housing market, now they've got no other option but perhaps to leave that money there and let it grow rather than try and take it out and cop a massive tax whack, because I just think it's even harder to get into the housing market now.
Well, yeah, it probably is, Tom. I don't know. I've got a house and I've had one for a long time. Well, I mean, I've paid it off, but I'm paying it off. But, yes, it's the budget's, I don't know why, but it's got a bit of a bollocking around the place. I haven't read everywhere. I've read a couple of newspapers and it seems to be getting, seem to have got a bit of a bollocking around the place from all sorts of people, I suppose. So, I don't know. Budget's never easy to release, but we live in different times, and you'd think there's a lot of things that people say, oh, we should have done this and should have done this. But what you're saying, I've read that multiple times from people talking about getting into the housing, and it'll be. And I suppose the theory was that the budget was supposed to make it easier for young kids to get into the housing market. But like you, many seem to say that the opposite is about to occur.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. I think the main thing that blows my mind is when you really think about it, with all due respect to the older generation, they are going to have all of their gains grandfathered come July 2027. So all the gains that they've made will come under the old rules with a 50% discount. But for the money that I have invested in the stock market or wherever it may be invested that hasn't got those gains yet, I'm expecting those gains to come over the next 5 to 10 years. All of a sudden, they're under the new rules. So I'm copping the brunt of the new rules, whereas all the gains that have been made by the older generation that they're already holding, that'll come under the old rules. So it actually hinders the younger generation more than the older generation, I feel. And it's not us against them. This is purely from my point of view as a young Australian trying to make something for my partner and two kids. I feel like it's been devastating. And I hope there's a bit of a repel. I hope that it struggles to get into legislation and something changes, because I don't think it's going to have the goal that they made out to be. And I really think that it needs to be reconsidered.
Well, as usual with politics, mate, they say one thing and mean another. I mean, it might be, they might say this is for this, but maybe there's other things at work and in play that you don't know or you don't realise about.
Well, there's a lot that we know that's in play. It's that they're heavily in debt, and it sounds like a cash grab, but I don't think it's going to help them. I think the debt is a money printing problem. It's only going to increase. The interest payments on their debt is only going to increase. We're going into a time where government bonds are exploding. That means rates are going to keep going up. They're not going to come down anytime soon. I think the whole economic landscape is a bit dire at the moment. And I wish more people would put the time to really look at what's going on and make a decision on that, because I don't think the economy's booming like people think it is. I think it's on the brink of a turn personally, but and we all got to look out for ourselves and do what we can, and exactly. Hopefully people can make the right decision.
Nice to talk to you, Tom. I'll talk to you again sometime. Where do you live? You live in Brunswick or?
Brunswick. Yeah. Brunswick, yeah, and just drive to Bunbury for work.
Good on you, mate.
Thanks, mate.
See you, bye.
Bye.
Morning, Kelly.
Hi, good morning.
You've made a quick trip to Canberra.
I've made a quick trip to Canberra, that's right. Just as well, it's a lovely day here in Canberra, despite the fog you'd reported on, the sun's peeking through.
Uh-huh, and what are you doing? Tell us.
Yeah, so I'm representing Beat Bladder Cancer Australia. We're the leading support group and for bladder cancer patients. And today is an awareness walk as part of International Bladder Cancer Awareness Month. And we're going to be doing a walk around Lake Burley Griffith, and we're going to have some patients joining us, and they'll be sharing some of their lived experiences, and we'll just be educating the public on the facts related to bladder cancer.
What's the organisation called? What's the name? What's it called?
Beat Bladder Cancer Australia.
Beat Bladder Cancer Australia, right? Yep. Good.
Yeah, and our website is www.beatbladdercanceraustralia.org.au, and the name of the walk is Anna's Walk, in memory of Anna, who passed away in 2017 from bladder cancer in her 40s.
So this is just happening in Canberra, is it? Or
No, it's a national event, so there's a walk happening in every state and territory and in New Zealand as well. So we're all walking, over 1,000 people we're hoping to have today. And hopefully people are listening at home. They'll come down and join us. The walk starts at 10 o'clock here in Canberra.
What's the stats? What's the stats on bladder cancer that everyone should know?
Good. So it's the 11th most common cancer in Australia for all for both genders. But for men, it's the 9th most common cancer. Mm-hmm. It's usually found in older, it has traditionally been found in older men, but we're seeing it being found in younger people, and particularly in women as well, where it traditionally wasn't seen in women. And that has a devastating impact, you know, on younger families. When people get the cancer at a younger age, it's often more aggressive. So really we're trying to send a message out there. If anyone sees blood in their urine, blood in the pee, see your GP. That's our message. But the other message is also that sometimes there isn't blood, and sometimes it's just a change in your urine, your urination, if you know, which may mimic a urinary tract infection. And we find people get misdiagnosed. They get treated for multiple infections rather than getting referred on to the urologist.
Urologist, are you, Kelly?
I'm a urologist myself, yes.
Uh-huh. And you work out of Canberra?
No, I'm actually in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And I am currently doing research and I do education at UNSW. But yes, previously worked at Westmead Hospital and Macquarie University Hospital in Sydney.
Well, Kelly, good luck today. You've got a reasonable day for it there in Canberra.
Yes. Okay. And please, can your listeners come along? and support us.
Where will you be? Where are you starting? Where are you finishing?
At the Carillion, and then we're walking around to the other side near where the National Library is, and then back again. It's a return route.
All right. Well,
we're starting out at the National Carillion.
The National Carillion. And what time do you start?
At 10 o'clock.
All right, Canberra, there you go. Get down there to the Carillion for 10 o'clock and go for a walk with Kelly. He'll tell you all about it. Good on you.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Where are you, Gary?
Mate, I'm good morning, Macca. How are you first?
Yeah, good.
I'm just coming into Yass. I wanted to tell you, I live in Sydney and I follow a rugby union team called Eastwood. And once a year they have a game away out at Cowra. And I just wanted to let everyone know what a lovely place Cowra is. It's beautiful.
It's a nice place. So you're with Eastwood Rugby Union Club, is that right?
That's correct.
Well, you wouldn't believe it, Gaz, would you? When I was a youngster, our band used to play at Eastwood on Eastwood Rugby Club on Saturday nights when I was at uni, and at home games. So if there's a home game, our little band played there when they were playing, you know, whoever they played. And one of the highlights was we'd be having a dance, and, of course, the fifth grade rugby or fourth grade or third grade come and form a scrum on the thing and knock everyone over. So it was, well, you might laugh, Gaz, but I thought it was fairly low rent. But anyway, it was fun. They were the good old days, yeah. Gaz.
Yeah, that's right too. Yeah.
So
we played Northern Suburbs and we won both grades.
And this is fabulous. Like in the what they call the Shoot Shield, is it?
That's the one. Yep. Eastwood's in a rebuild, but they're rebuilding quite nicely by the look of it, so it's working out well. But I got to tell you, I've just come through Bora. It's a lovely country out here.
Yeah, and it's looking. They've had some rain, have they?
No, not yet. No, there's no rain. There's a little bit of fog here, just out of Yass, but no rain so far.
The countryside's looking good, is it? Or
There's a fair bit of green there. Not a lot of feed, but you know it's low to the ground, but it's still there.
All right, Gary. Go on.
Yeah, I was going to say my dog and I have enjoyed the weekend, or the couple of days out here at Cowra, and just wanted to let everyone know what a lovely place it is.
It's a nice town. Good on you. Thanks, Gary.
God bless and thank you very much.
See you, mate. Bye. CD's in Karratha. Morning, CD.
Good morning. How you going, Macca?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, just to let you know, this place is jumping out of its skin up here at the moment.
For what reason, CD?
It's just the activity up here at the Burrup Peninsula. There's a big fertiliser plant going out there, and I was out there about 2 weeks ago, and I just couldn't believe. There's just mayhem out there. It's just that much going on. It's just unbelievable.
What is this, a new plant?
Yeah, it's a new big fertiliser plant going in.
Uh-huh. So they're in the construction stage, always busy around that, isn't it?
Oh, there's quite a few different big projects you got on up here, big solar farms going in down the road, and yeah, it's amazing, really.
Uh-huh. And
all those construction camps are all full of guys. Yeah, it's all jumping out of its skin, mate.
Sadie, are you working there, or?
No, mate, I retired 3 years ago. I was to work for one of the iron ore companies up here for 44 years.
Mm. And so now you're just hanging, because if I recall correctly, Sadie, you said as soon as the traffic lights go in at Karratha, you're leaving.
Yeah, I'm still trying. I'm a professional tinkerer, Mac. I'm trying to de-tinker my shed so I can actually start moving off somewhere else.
Decluttering, eh?
Decluttering, yeah.
Gee, isn't it amazing? There's a place I go past near where I live in Hurstville. And it's full of junk. This bloke's got cars and crap, and you can't believe it. Old washing machines in the front yard. I shudder to think what the house is like, but the front yard is just full of crap. And he's also got stuff parked in the street, trailers full of stuff. He must go around collecting stuff. What are you doing? I don't know. We've got too much stuff, CD.
Yeah, I'm not a professional hoarder, but I collect auto memorabilia and stuff. My sheds are a real super different man cave, and yeah, everyone comes around calls it a museum up here. But anyway,
it doesn't go
past the boundaries of my shed. All my yards are clean and uncluttered.
No, so but we love to collect. Well, not all of us, but sometimes it just happens. You just collect things, and things, and then you're surrounded by, and it's sort of worrying in lots of ways. Because, you know, if you came up at a certain time, you don't like throwing stuff out because you weren't brought up to throw things out. You kept everything, you know, and all of a sudden you got a house and maybe a yard full of junk, and it is junk.
Yeah, I'm amazed, Mac, that people, I guess I've been here that long, people throw that much stuff away. A lot of people now come around here and ask me, can I fix this and fix that, and go, yeah, I can do that for you. You know, rather than throw stuff out. It's amazing some of the projects I get. I don't choose a lot of them, but I still get a lot of projects that I get my head around and help people out. Yeah, it's good.
Well, you can do things, see, but I'm not sure there's a lot of people like you around the place, and you're in high demand, I suppose. People who can, you know, we used to have a little bloke in the street who used to mend shoes, but he's gone. So I suppose you throw them away now. But yeah, again, you can find shoes in your house. There's shoes. You don't throw anything away because you're just not used to throwing it away. But you've got to be ruthless, CD. Absolutely right, ruthless.
Yeah, the roundabouts, the traffic lights are working overtime up here, Macca.
We'll have to come to Karratha. I'd love to come to Karratha this year. If we get a chance, we'll get on the road and go to Perth maybe and go north, head north, mate.
It's really changed up here. If you come up here, you'd see an unbelievable difference with high-rise buildings and lots of activity around town for the local public and that. Yeah, it's been great.
We'll have to do it, Cedi. You've got to get around. It's the way to go. And a truckie rang us from Headland last week. Did you hear him? And he was talking about the roads and stuff like that, but, yeah, he said it's going mad in Headland too.
I've got to just say one thing about truckies. Without truckies, we're toast up here.
Exactly.
They do an unbelievable job. I've sort of involved a men shed up here, and, yeah, I've spent a bit of time at one of the truckies' yards up here, and, mate, they're so busy, you never stop, you know, driving 24 hours, you know. Some of the trucks that come up from Perth and go further up north and that, of the active drivers, and they live in their cab. That's their bedroom, their lounge room. It's everything.
Yeah, I know. They live. They live on the road. They live in their cabs, don't they?
Yep.
Good on you. Thanks, Cedi.
Okay, no worries, mate. Good to have a chat.
Thanks for your call. Bye. KJ's in Blackburn. Is that right, KJ?
Yes, Blackburn South, Macca. Good morning. How are you?
Oh, good. Thank you.
Macca, I had 5 weeks holiday in India at the southern part. Steaming hot, 34 degrees, lots of people, beautiful places. And, you know, the buoyancy with the young people in India is just unimaginable. You have to go there to see how many young people are there, you know. Very, very rich people, very, very poor. But seems like most of the people are happy. You know, we met families, friends. That's a great place, some deep forest. Sometimes we go on to the beaches. We did lots of travel, and we came back, and I live in Blackburn South. This morning I got up for a walk. There's a beautiful, gentle drizzle. All the trees are 360 degrees, only trees. They're changing colors. Some of them are brown, orange, and yellow. Along with the rain, the leaves are falling. I'm just thought, all the good karma we did in India, I've been now transported to a heaven in the Blackburn South.
Well, India sounds sounds wonderful. A lot of young people, as you said. You came from India how long ago?
Yes. We came in 1993. Mm. We've been calling the eastern suburbs of Melbourne our home. Our children grew here and they all left now. Myself and my wife retired. We do travel. But every time I come back, you know, a lot of people in India ask me, what is good about Australia? What's the national thing? I keep thinking the two best things stand up for me. Number one, there's a wonderful balance in this country. You know, whoever you are, you're the painter, you're, you know, cleaning somewhere, you're engineer. You can choose to have work-life balance and other kinds of things and live. The second thing is the compassion you see here, Macca. It's just unbelievable. Whether it's an optometrist checking your glasses or the nurse or you go to a Boxhill Hospital for emergency, you really, really care for another human life. It's a beautiful Aussie feeling. And I sometimes think many Australians don't realize how good it is. They may not think they whinge and they say lots of things. I'm telling you, get out, see the world, come back. This is a great place to live.
Yeah, well, it's always been a great place to live, KJ, as long as I've been here, and that's because the people, they're nice people. Mostly they're nice people here in Australia, and sometimes they get a bit browned off because people try to change the basic nature of the place. That's what I think. That's probably why they whinge about things. So it's a nice place. We don't have a lot of horribleness going on, but there is horribleness. But it's basically a nice place. Most people get on well, yeah, and you can hear them here in the morning, and they're all nice. Yeah. They're just pottering along, and they just tell you what they're doing, and we have all sorts of discussions. But you won't get any argument from me about this lovely country. I've lived here a long time, and I like it. But you know, I'd love to go to India, but I don't think I could cope because it'd be a completely different from Oz, isn't it? Because there's 100 times more people there, and I don't know how you cope with that. But I suppose as humans, we'd cope. You'd cope if you were thrown into Madras or into Delhi or something. You'd just say, wow. But after a while, you'd get used to it, wouldn't you, KJ?
Of course. I mean, there are cities, but we went to some parts of Kerala deep in the forest where you only have elephants for company. It's a huge waterfall. You walk for a long time. I get up in the morning every day, walk at least four or five kilometers. You can't see a soul. And it is thick forest and beautiful. And there's a small shop. At 5 in the morning, they dispense you hot chai. It's a different kind of feel. You should go, Maka. You would love it because...
I'd have to go with someone like you, KJ. It's like my Italian friend. You go to Italy, you want to go with an Italian person, or go to Spain, someone who used to live there, or someone from Portugal. Yeah. That's the way. So next time I feel like I want to go there, I'll ring you, KJ, and you can give me a guided tour.
Yeah. Before I leave, I want to say this, Maka. A lot of dirty streams, they go and merge in the huge sea, but the character of the sea does not change. So no matter who comes here, how terrible they are, the few here and there, but Australia is an ocean of great, and that doesn't change. It's just passing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Maka. Have a good day.
And KJ, before you go,
yeah,
when you take me there, you can show me where the best dozer is, okay?
Oh, yes, there's plenty, but yes, there are some lovely places. You won't believe, we had things to eat from $2 to $30, and they are all the same fantastic place. So that's the kind of place you have, if you have the patience and the tolerance to say, you know, world is full of things, you just put on the right filter and you find, oh my God, this is a beautiful place too.
Good on you, KJ.
Thank you.
See you, bye.
See you, bye.
I met Tony Cox yesterday. I'm talking to Tony Cox, National Director of Stella Maris. You're based in Melbourne. Tell people what Stella Maris do.
Well, it's the Catholic missionary arm for all the seafarers. Here in Australia, we've got about 5-6 different centres. Basically, we attend to all the needs of all the seafarers when they visit the Port of Melbourne and the other ports. You know, Sydney, Western Australia, Adelaide, Darwin as well, you know. So any need that can be addressed, if we can, we will support them as well.
And your mate Michael Kelly, who's just got his OAM, he helps in lots of ways, doesn't he?
Well, to be honest, today is the first time I've met Michael, but I've heard enough about him to think or to know that I've known him for years. It's obvious that his heart is where his hands are, in the sense of helping everybody. He's just an incredible individual in terms of his recognition and his ministry to the maritime industry and to all the seafarers, no matter who they are and where they're from.
It really shone in COVID when he was very concerned about all the seafarers who were trapped on board, sometimes for 18 months. I can't imagine it myself, and getting beanies to them and getting little food packages and stuff because they couldn't go shopping. It must have been terrible.
It certainly was. Basically, they were held like prisoners, and it was certainly Sydney, Melbourne was exactly the same in the sense of 18 months, 2 years, the seafarers not even allowed to put a foot on solid ground. And I think just the fact that they needed just prayers, support and the care packages, it's highlighted again now with the Straits as well. Mm. You know, how many thousands of you know, food, water, all of those different things that we forget about.
We take it for granted
so much. And really speaking, they're just prisoners on their own ships, and yet they've given, you know, family, friends, freedom and health and all of those different things for us in other parts of the world.
Tony Cox, tell me your story. How did you get wound up with Stella Maris?
Funnily enough, when I first left school, I wanted to work for a couple of years, and I took the job that paid the most amount of money as a 19-year-old, and I worked for the Melbourne Harbour Trust Commissioners. I worked with them for 2 years, and then I decided to go into the seminary. After ordination, I was sent to Japan. I was in Japan for 20 years and then came back.
What
to
was
Australia.
That like?
Just fantastic, fantastic experience. Yeah, I loved it, loved it. And then I was reassigned to Melbourne. And then when I came back, I just started volunteering in 1996 with Stella Maris in Melbourne. According to appointments and different things like that, whenever I have been able to help, I've just volunteered driving buses, going on ships, and sort of being an ordained priest. Can't really say it comes in handy, but it is very, very good pastorally, especially when there's been sickness or death or some tragedies. And to say Mass on board with all the different seafarers as well, it's really great. And then just on 18 months ago, the Bishops of Australia appointed me as National Director. So I'm based out of Melbourne at the moment.
So you'd speak Japanese, I'd reckon.
I try to anyway. When in doubt, grin and bow, and you get through with a lot.
I'll remember that.
Okay.
Tony, you're the biggest port in Australia, really, Melbourne, aren't you?
The busiest, that's for sure. On the average, it's possibly about 19, 20 ships a day that come into Melbourne, really. And when you think about 25 seafarers on each ship, one of the big things that opened my mind was one day when I was on one of the bricks, as we call them, the car carriers. There was one car coming off a car carrier in Melbourne down at Webb Dock every 10 seconds. So it just shows you how much, not just only in the automobile business, but we rely so much on the seafarers, the forgotten people of our world in many ways, because you never really see them. And it's getting more so now because the ships are getting bigger and the turnaround is getting shorter and shorter.
Tony Cox, great to meet you. And
Thank you very much indeed. Thanks very much.
G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. Clyde speaking.
Hi, Clyde. How you going?
Good.
That's the way. Where are you?
Well, we're just coming into Walga, but we live in Canamble.
Oh, right. I've been to Canamble. I've been to Walgett too. And how's things in Walgett? You get rain there? Is there any rain around?
Not much in Canamble. Bit of a drought there.
Yeah, drought in Canamble, I suppose, in Walgett. But I think there's a bit of rain around the place, isn't it? Around the corner, maybe?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, I think it's
cloudy.
Yeah, that's good. So what are you up to, Clyde? What's going on, mate?
Well, got a union game in Wog.
Today?
Yeah.
And that's you. You're playing. How old are you, Clyde?
7 turning 8 this year.
7 turning 8. So, and what position do you play in your rugby team?
Back.
Back, like a centre or something, or a 5'8" or a winger or, yeah, all right. So, and you play for Canamble, but you're playing Walgett, I'd say.
Yeah.
And what's that under what? Under eights, under nines, tens?
I think it's under eights, yeah.
Under eights. So, you enjoy that?
Yes. Yep. Spoke to you last year the same time.
Oh, did you? And how does Canamble go? What's the name? What's your mascot in Canamble? What are you, the Canamble what?
Canamble Rams.
The Canamble Rams. And Walgett is, what's Walgett? What are they?
They're lambs, but they're basically the same, but different colours.
Different colours, yeah, exactly. All right, so what time's that match start, Clyde?
10.
2 o'clock. Yeah, well, that's nice.
10 o'clock.
Well, it's a nice drive today, a nice drive, and especially if it rains, you won't even mind if it rains in the rugby. Really? Because everyone will stop and start beeping their horns and cheering and things like that. Yeah. What else is happening, Clyde? Can you tell me anything? What have you been up to? What have you been doing?
Well, we're going to Warren Horse Sports next week.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, the rest will take care of itself. You're a pretty busy boy, Clyde, aren't you? Really?
Yeah.
You've got your own horse?
Yeah.
What's your horse?
Bronte.
Bronte. Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, you'll get a good crowd there today. I suppose it's pretty important. Are other teams playing today?
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a festival, is it, of rugby today in Walgett?
Sort of,
yeah. All right, Clyde, good on you. Nice to talk to you.
Okay, bye.
It's a pleasure, and good luck with you in your match today, the Rams versus the Lambs.
Thanks.
See you, mate.
Bye.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Oh, g'day, Macca. This is Cole from Torella.
Hi, Cole.
How are you?
Yeah.
That's good. Your program this morning is really resonating with me.
Right, good.
Mainly, main connection is the Cancer Awareness Month, the Bladder Cancer Awareness Month.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't aware of bladder cancer until I was given a script to go to a specialist at Herschel Hospital. And this guy's a bit of a cowboy with these sorts of cancers. And he's got a theory that you work on the 2x2 basis. You're diagnosed within 2 weeks, your action within 2 weeks. And I can't tell you how fantastic I feel after having the surgery this week.
Oh, that's great. Great news, Colin.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I've got to give it to my my GP who sent me there. He's at Regent Street Medical Centre opposite our old alma mater, Cogra High School, mate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, honour super omnia.
Yeah, honour above all, yep.
Yep. So, I've really enjoyed the program, and you had a guy talking about teenagers on gliders.
Oh, yeah, early in this morning he was taking a couple of 15-year-olds or 16-year-olds, and he said gliding when he was a kid was all for kids, but now the people are older who go gliding now, but you'd wonder why kids wouldn't get right into gliding, wouldn't you? I mean, go on.
My niece is into it. She's only 15, and she's done solo flights. She's aiming to be a commercial pilot. So, you know, it's incredible to see. You know, and her name's Amelia, which is a coincidence. So,
as in Amelia Earhart.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think there'd be nothing nicer than just being up there on your own and just hearing the hiss of the wind, and that's all you get. It's always nice when you get somewhere where no one else is, and I think that'd be mighty. But I'm not sure I'd be game to do it, mate. I'm a bit of a sissy, a bit of a wuss. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I like to get the wind through the hair when I'm on my bike, but. Bit late for that now, seeing as I'm bald and the bike threw me off a couple of months ago. So, yeah, but I'm recovering from that pretty well, but I wasn't feeling 100%. And my GP eventually assigned me to a specialist, and he recognized what was the issue and acted on it straight away. And I could tell you, I haven't had the result of the biopsy yet, but the removal of it has made so much change. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's called the organisation is doing the run. It's in Canberra. It's all around the place, actually. But Beat Bladder Cancer, I think, is the W. If you W all the W's, Beat Bladder Cancer, you'll find out all about it.
Yeah, I've got that now, and thanks very much for that.
So you went to Cogra High, did you say?
Too bloody right, mate. Yep.
Too bloody right. It's probably a lot different when you went there. When we went there, we had potholes. We had nothing. We had nothing. It was terrible. No, it was fine. It was, you know, we didn't miss not having a gym. The other day, I walked past Sydney Grammar School and started talking to a father and a couple of kids, and he says, "Oh, go in." So they're having their concert. You should see their concert hall. It's like the Sydney Cricket Ground or the Melbourne Cricket Ground. It's huge. It's a great cavern, and they got everything, and we had nothing, but we struggled through.
They had side names for the potholes, you know. So watch out, Harry. Glenn, you know.
We weren't that sophisticated. Actually, we just took potholes for granted. We just thought that was part of the deal. We didn't actually know they were potholes. I'm just reporting on that now. Later, go on.
The best ones were down at Scarborough Park.
Yeah.
I think it's called that because part of it is scar, and that's what you're left with at the end of it. So, but yes, good old Cogra.
Good old Cogra. Cole, great to talk to you, mate.
Yeah.
And congratulations. Well done.
Thanks, mate.
See ya.
Hello.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
It's Jeff from Port Pirie, Macca.
G'day, Jeff.
Brought back some memories when you was talking to the captain that went down on the Aurora Australis down south. I went down in end of 72, 73 on the Nella, and I'll never forget how rough it was.
The Nella Dan. Yeah, well, that was the story I told about Sir Philip Law. I said to him, he'd been down there many times. He told us about walking up on this mountain that was down in Antarctica, and he walked up, and he said to himself, "No one's ever been here before. I'm the first person here." But then he'd been down there 30 or 40 times, mostly in the Aurora, maybe probably in the Nella Dan too. And he said, "I said, are you going down again?" Because he was 92 at the time. We were doing the winter festival there on the docks at Hobart. And he said, "No, I'm not going down again." He said, "I can't stand the seasickness." So it'd be pretty rugged, I reckon, Jeff.
We're trying to sleep at night in the bunk. I sort of put your feet up one end and then sort of have a bag at the end of your head to stop you from sliding backwards and forwards. But I don't know how the crew and all that operated walking around, because you're swaying from side to side. But the best part about it was when that was over, but going through the sea ice, it was unbelievable cutting its way through the sea ice, and the bloody auroras down there, it was very fond memories.
Why were you going down there, Jeff? Were you working down there, were you?
I did national service, and I ended up being a cook. And I had a friend in Piri that went down many years before, and he was very interesting talking about it. And then when I got out of the army, I sort of had the opportunity. I applied, and I didn't think I'd get down because I only had a short experience, but that's how I ended up going down there, a cook for 14 months.
And a lifetime experience, Jeff. You remember? See, wouldn't national service or something like that, wouldn't it just, it's a no-brainer, I think, national service. I just really think you can do all sorts of things. It doesn't mean you have to fire guns, although when you look around the world now, it'd be handy to know how to fire a gun and which end was which, but you don't have to do that. You could do all sorts of things. I mean, maybe when I was 19 or 20, I would love to have gone on the Nella Dan, but now you wouldn't get me near it because I couldn't stand being seasick. It's about the worst feeling in the world, isn't it, being seasick? You feel like you want to die. You feel like
that's
it's
true.
Well, you feel like you are dying, actually. It's terrible.
But that's a good thing about National Service, which, you know, I didn't thought I was going to apply for something I can get out of it, and that's what I ended up cook. But it got me down there with very little experience, and I was there for 14 months, so
wonderful.
I enjoyed it.
How's Piri this morning, Jeff?
Yeah, we had 16 mil Friday night, and it rained this morning. I haven't got up to have a look this morning, but
there's a bit of rain around, isn't there? They said it was going to be drier than usual this autumn, winter, but it's a bit of rain around at the moment. Great to talk to you, Jeff.
Yeah, right. Good. Thanks a lot, Macca.
See you in Piri.
Yeah, hope to see you.
G'day, this is Macca.
Macca, hi, it's Sharon from Melbourne, but I'm currently in Margaret River.
Oh, you lucky devil. What are you doing there?
Well, we're at the mouth of the Margaret River at the moment, about to start day four of the Cape to Cape trek.
The Cape to Cape trek?
Yeah. So you walk from the top lighthouse at Cape Naturalist to the bottom lighthouse at Cape, and it's 132 kilometres.
And that's why your phone sounds so terrible.
Oh, does it? I'm sorry.
Are you on speaker or are you on just normal?
I'm just in the outdoors, that's all.
Well, that's all right. So you're going from Cape Naturalist to
Cape Lewin. The south, yeah. Near Augusta, yeah.
And how long's that walk? I've heard of that walk before, but never done it.
Oh, we're doing it in 7 days. So we've got around about 20, 24 each day to do, and we've got the ocean by our side the whole way. It's just so stunning. It's beautiful country.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. When people ring me in the morning here and you get, you know, we go all over Australia and sometimes the world, and I think, you know, I'd just love to be with you, actually. Walking along the beach like that is just a beautiful thing. And you'll see all sorts of things because it's national park, and you probably might even see a seal or something like that.
Well, our statistics at the moment are three snakes and one lizard. and hundreds of kangaroos.
That's a lot of kids, don't you love it? Yeah. Well, and what's your story? You're from Melbourne, Sharon?
I'm from Melbourne, and we've just retired early so that we can do great walks, and this is one of them. We did the Overland Track in Tassie, and now we're doing Margaret River.
Well, ring us next week and tell us how you're going, okay?
Okay, I will. Thanks, Macca.
See you, Sharon. Bye. I wanted to play a little bit of opera for you. We'll have an opera morning next week and you'll ring up and sing. It's very good for your singing, apparently. Keep the cards and letters coming. There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at maccatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.